Hello, Emory listeners. Welcome back to another episode of Emory Podcast. As always, I'm so thrilled to be spending time with you here today, wherever you are, whenever you are in the world. I'm super excited to introduce our guest today, Sunny Megatron. But before, drumroll, before I do that, I need to give you a little reminder because I keep forgetting this amazing experience that we have coming up in Costa Rica. So we still have spaces for the Nature of Relating retreat in Costa Rica, November 9th to the 14th. My beautiful and amazing co-host, Julie Hamilton, and her partner, Ken, will be there. There are some other amazing participants who might be leading sessions here and there as well. This is really your opportunity to be in a safe community and explore the immense potential of relational connection to yourself, to others, to nature. Who doesn't want to be in Costa Rica? There are no requirements, just in case you're asking, like, I'm not polyamorous, can I come? Yes, you can. We basically just decenter monogamy. So monogamy is not the assumed relational style. We open it up to everything. So you can be in any relationship structure as long as you are ready to do the deep work and inquiry and have fun. So if you want more information, please look at, there will be a link in the show notes of this episode. If it's easier for you to find on Instagram, there's a link in the bio. Reach out to me if you have questions. I'm happy to book just a free 20-minute call if you are curious if the retreat is right for you right now. But I would highly recommend that you take action because we are over 50% sold. The hotel is doubled in size from last year, so that means it's going to be a big-ass retreat. So get yourself a spot there. I'm so excited to meet you and spend time with you. One other note is that on August 26th, not sure when we will release this, probably before, but August 26th, we have a call with Jolie and I so that you can ask questions about the retreat. It's also open to the retreat members, so you can meet some people who have already said yes. I think if you're sitting on the fence, attending that call would be something you want to do. So that's August 26th. Again, link is in the bio of Instagram, and I'll make sure it's in the show notes too. Okay, housekeeping over. Now I get to introduce our amazing guest. Sunny Megatron is an award-winning clinical sexologist, BDSM and certified sexuality educator, and media personality. She's the host and executive producer of the Showtime original series, Sex with Sunny Megatron, and co-hosts ASECT award-winning American Sex Podcast, as well as Open Deeply podcast. If you remember, that is the one that she hosts with Kate Lurie, and that's how I met Sunny. So thank you, Kate. Currently, she's the editor-in-chief of Kink Focus Zipper magazine. So I have to tell you, I've totally enjoyed Sunny's podcasts. I really find her to be extremely funny, present. She is known for her one-of-a-kind build-your-own-adventure approach to sex, kink, and relationships, and coined the BDSM community catchphrase, kink is customizable. In her sellout workshops, her unique brand of edutainment, I love that word, edutainment, that's probably what this is, seamlessly combines her humorous teaching style, interactive exercises, and latest sexuality research. Her passion is helping others overcome shame and find their power through play and pleasure. Oh my God, this is why we have you on the podcast, Sunny. And she's working on her first book, Customizable Kink, A Strategic Guide to Adult Play. Oh, Sunny, I am so excited for us. Thank you for joining us.
I am so excited too. I am very thankful for, you know, the work that I do and the awesome people I get to meet and that we connected and met. And I was like, oh, we can have 10,000 gazillion billion 11D wonderful conversations. So let's do it. Well, so this is number two.
Number two. Ding. Let it begin. Yes. Oh my God. I found the same thing too. When we were talking, you and Kate and I was just like, oh, we need to talk more. And you know what's so funny is that you were in the world of kink and BDSM, and the Megan 5 years ago would have been like, oh, I don't talk about those things. Like, that's not my world. And the me Megan is just like, yes, like, let's dig in. I want to learn more. I'm so curious. I'm finding so many overlaps with my world now, when I've learned practicing polyamory, about agreements, about consent, about removing the shame from different things. To me, it is basically the same pattern played out in different areas of our life.
Absolutely.
Right?
You know, one of my passions is talking to folks and teaching folks that are kind of like, oh, kink, but there's something about it that's a little hot. I want to find out more, but I'm nervous. No, I don't. You know, so, and I often tell those folks, like, it's the misconceptions of like, it's this big, scary, extreme thing. And it really isn't. Like you said, the skills that we use in one area are transferable over to another area. And, you know, one of the analogies, comparisons, whatever, that I use is, okay, let's look at our vanilla lives when we're talking about play and playing with some of those scary or adrenaline fueled emotions. And it's like, you ride roller coasters, you go to escape rooms, you like scary movies, you're a marathon runner and you're training and you love those blisters on your feet and stopping to puke on the side of the running trail. You're a masochist, you know, and there's not that much to, and if we frame it like this is play and this is playing with like extreme feelings and sensations, it's relatable to everybody. And a lot of us find like we might already kind of be doing something very similar. Yeah.
That exactly has been what I've realized. I'm like, oh, this is already here everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, there's already kink that's happening. And even the idea of existential kink for me mm-hmm. really got it like, oh no, there's kink with ideas. There's kink everywhere.
Yeah.
So what I really want to, I mean, I don't even know where to start. You can tell me if there's a place that is lighting you up right now about your work, because I know you've been actually podcasting since 2017. Mm-hmm. I mean, your American Sex podcast has well over 200 episodes. I feel like you have probably talked about so many different things. But I want to know what is lighting you up most right now about the work that you're doing.
There's so much, you know, it's like this question is like, with everything, hyper-focus, everything. And I really think it is, you know, as I just move through the world and my work, I spot more and more of these transferable parallels where it's like, okay, in kink, we're doing XYZ, in vanilla life, in our polyamorous relationships, in whatever it is, even in our relationships with like our family members and the way we communicate, we're also doing XYZ just with a little different flavor. It's really the same foundations. So I think just that overall concept of I'm a pattern seeker, and the more I seek patterns, the more patterns I see, and the more everything becomes more simple. Like the complicated things become more simple because you realize they're all the same.
Oh my God. You are, yes, just yes, yes, and yes. It is, don't you feel like life is a choose your own adventure? Mm-hmm. But really every adventure is going to get you, if you're truly on the path of learning, it will get you to the same concepts that someone else that had a totally different adventure is like, oh yeah, I've learned that thing too. And the older I get, exactly that. I feel like things are more simple. Mm-hmm. And some place that we might be able to start, because I feel like there's a big overlap between the kink community and consent and creating these agreements and the agreements of an open relationship or the agreements in polyamory, because when we leave monogamy, we open up ourselves to having to write our own, I mean, rules, quote unquote, mm-hmm. but instead of using the word rules, I like the word agreements. And to me, I'm kind of on a geek out session with my current 6-month group that I'm doing. We spent a whole month talking about the different agreements Ooh. In life and really identifying everything that we do, everything that we believe is in the framework of agreements. Mm-hmm. And so if we look at just the overall meta pattern of agreements of the way that we relate mm-hmm. in just relationships in general, and then the way that you set up really explicit agreements in any type of kind of kink setup or BDSM, like all of that, I feel like that's really where this conversation could meet, and then we can go from there.
Yes. Yeah, agreements really are at the crux of everything. You know, it's consent is at the crux of BDSM, which is agreements, which involves, you know, boundary setting, which involves everything else. And we're not good at that just in general. So we walk into, whether it's kink, whether it's polyamory, whether it's any of those things, with the book knowledge or the logic of, well, yes, we must talk about everything and blah, 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 and have these agreements. But when it comes down to actually doing it, it requires not only this tremendous amount of self-awareness, which we have been conditioned to not have, you know, it, our shame just covers all of that stuff up. And then also having the emotional knowledge or intelligence, I kind of don't like the phrase emotional intelligence, but that's what we got. That's the phrase we've got. But having that to compassionately relate to another person, even if they are saying things or making agreements or having boundaries or desires that don't jibe with us, those are two huge skills that we are not only not conditioned to have and develop, we're conditioned to not have them.
So I completely agree. And what has, I don't know how personal you get in your shares, totally, but what personal has your... Yeah.
Nothing's awesome off limits. Like, how, yeah.
Perfect. I love that. What has your path been like? You know, where did you start in the way that you were relating to your body, and how did you move through pieces of shame and start to really empower yourself with your agreements of your body, mm-hmm. and your agreements in what you did and how you, I don't know, kind of your emotional journey on yeah. that? Because I know I'm still like, I'm still in mine. I don't know if it ever finishes.
Caveat, that's what I'm going to say. I'm still in mine. Like, people are like, you're an expert. You figured it all out. No, I'm just, maybe I've been doing a little bit longer. I figured different things out. But I don't think this ever ends for anybody. I am still learning every day. So for me, I am also consensually non-monogamous. You know, I'm married. We have other partners, et cetera, kinky, the whole deal. And I did not come out as, you know, polyamorous, kinky, or even queer until my mid-30s. So I had a whole lot of baggage. You know, I had the abusive relationships, the conditioning of I need to be this certain way according to my gender and all of these expectations. And it's a lot. But one of the biggest things was I did not know that I got to have boundaries. So a lot of my work on the boundary setting and the getting comfortable with that is figuring out what they were, figuring out what I wanted. I had lived an entire adult life compromising myself and providing for others' needs and fooling myself into thinking, well, those are my needs too, right? And it was like everything came crashing down with that realization, like I am starting from square one. And not only am I starting from square one in, you know, acquiring that knowledge, I'm having to unlearn all of these unhealthy patterns and habits. So am I still doing that? Yes. You know, it's been, I just turned 52. How did this happen? And I've done a lot, but there is still so much more to go. And I know I will be, even if I live to the ripe old age of, I think I read an article, there's a woman that just celebrated her 114th birthday. Even if I live that long, I will still, to the day I die, be learning new stuff. Yeah.
Yes. Oh my God. Oh, I love that so much. I relate so much to that, like boundaries. Oh, we actually get to understand what works for us and what doesn't. Mm-hmm. The meta skill with that is that we have to actually check in and understand what's happening within us. Mm-hmm. You know, that's been kind of my self-love journey, which is like, I don't even, do I know what these sensations are inside of me? Like, what does this mean? This feeling that I feel in my gut or in my throat, or like, I don't know. Let me check in with that. Yeah. Am I feeling comfortable with this? Am I overriding my own self to be like, oh, I don't know if I say no, what will happen? It's just like, now I feel like this is a whole land to play in.
Yes.
And I'm excited for my adult self. You know, you look amazing for
thank you
being in your 50s.
Thank you.
Holy
thank
crap.
You.
I turned 44 in October, so I'm feeling like I feel so excited. I'm like, I still have a working body, and I'm like, oh, I get to play now that I know.
Yes.
I think about where I started my sexual journey, and that it wasn't here, that's for sure. And I'm so excited now to take the knowledge that I have and this ability to have boundaries and this ability to talk and ask and be like, is this comfortable for you? What do you want to do? How are you feeling? Where do we match? It's okay if we don't match there. You know, like what are the different ways that I can play with my partners? It just feels like a whole new land, a whole new land.
Yes.
I'm like, kinks. Like what kinks are there out there if people are in the new to this world? I mean, I feel like I'm fairly new. I'm
Right.
just allowing the idea of like, maybe I have kinks. If I do, what are they? How do you recommend someone start to even step into this conversation?
Yeah, it's a lot. The first thing I want to highly encourage people to do is everything they've learned about kink through the media, through whatever, just life, what you know, throw it all out the window because it's probably crap. And this is where like the kink is customizable really comes in because, you know, as I started working with folks, and this is even my own journey, okay? When I got into kink, it was 2000 and like the mid 2000, 2007, eight, something like that. I saw what was on the internet. FetLife was a brand new website. It's a social networking website for kinky people. And so I was one of the first users on that website, stumbled into it because I met somebody on Craigslist who was kinky. It ended up okay, but that was, you know, a little risky. And I was like, okay, in my mind, kink was the place where I could play. I could just be whatever I wanted to be. And I started to read about the kink community and look at the local gatherings and in my own community. And I was like, wow, this is some rigid, if you're a dominant, you must be this. And if you're a submissive, you must be that. And you can't do this and you can't do that. Oh, you want to, you know, do a role play kink and you're a submissive? Well, you can't act like that. And I was like, what? I am trading one set of rigid rules for another. And I realized through my journey and then becoming a sexologist and a kink educator that all of these rules that we think that are, you know, in kink that we have to abide by, they're all crap. You get to make them up yourself. The only rule that we all have to abide by is consent. And even the way we go about establishing and maintaining and et cetera, consent, that's all customizable too. So if you reframe kink as this is play, this is fun, throw all the rules about how you're supposed to act and what you're supposed to do out the window. That opens up a lot. So then I'll encourage folks to say, okay, you know, what is that thing that you see, whether it's maybe it's a scene in a movie and it's not kinky, but there's this interplay between the characters, right? Some of the classics are Adam Driver and Star Wars. Why am I is my brain not, you know, Rey and what the heck is his name? Y'all know, listeners, you know what I'm talking about. Those scenes where she's like tied up in the chair and he has her captured. People have some feelings. People have some feelings. Okay.
Is that like original Star Wars? Are we talking
No,
about
this
Princess
is the last
Leia?
one
No, the recent.
with Adam
I don't
Driver.
know that
Yeah.
one.
And my brain is just, you know, I've got 52-year-old brain. I might look good, but look under the hood in my brain, you'll see it's a lot of wrinkles and okay. Anyway. So like think about scenes like that, like or even things from our childhood, you know, like when I'm Gen X, there was a lot of quicksand, a lot of getting stuck in quicksand, you know. So it's like, do you have those that imagery from when you were a kid watching movies and stuff? Maybe a character got tied up or was trapped or, you know, that sort of thing. Or maybe you identify with the person doing the tying up or whatever it is. So like what gets you going? Or if you watch that kink, you know, kink porn late at night and nobody knows and you want to deny it to yourself, but it's still that thing that gets you going. That's what you need to explore. And don't explore it in terms of, okay, how do I tie somebody up or how do I, you know, spank or whatever? Explore it in what feelings am I getting out of it? What am I, you know, indulging and how does it make me feel? Because in kink, it's not necessarily what we do. And, you know, on an individual basis, that's going to vary. But in general, it's not necessarily what we do. It's why we do it, the intention we're doing it with, what feeling we're getting out of it, what kind of connection it's giving us to our partners, what sort of intimacy it's fostering, what types of things and emotions and states of beings and scenarios that we don't get to experience in our real life do we get to take out and play with and improv with and explore that part of ourselves. That's really what kink is about. The oh, I'm going to use a flogger or a paddle or this and that. That's just kind of a means to an end, and that's interchangeable.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, this is resonating so hard. I actually downloaded your ebook.
Oh.
And yeah, like it's great because it's really simple and you've got this part unpacked where it's about what emotion do you want to feel. And when I read it, it was like, oh my God, that makes so much sense. It really is about what emotional state do you want to experience? And I can imagine, like, we are so multifaceted, but we only get to experience ourselves in like a thin layer of that.
Yes.
Because of the roles that we're in or how we see ourselves. But kink really is this place to play. And mm-hmm. I love that focus on the emotion. What comes up for me too is like archetypes, mm-hmm. you know, what archetypes are in there? And for me, I have several for sure that I want to explore and play more with, like, but I definitely have this like queen archetype that I like playing with. That like the Cleopatra fantasy has been with me for a long time, mm-hmm. a long, long time. I have many other ones too, but that one, I'm like, ooh, what is it? Like what energy, what emotion am I seeking to play there? Like there's definitely a dominance. There's definitely like some piece in there that that's so fun. And now I used to just like imagine these things, but now I'm letting them come to the forefront of my consciousness to mm-hmm. say, okay, well, what is there to explore?
Yes.
How can I explore that particular feeling or that archetype or that role? You know, who will play with me in that?
Right.
My partners, thankfully, are like very open. So
yeah. And you know, one thing I really want to point out with kink that I think a lot of the misconceptions come from is we're playing most of the time in kink, not always, but most of the time we're playing with power, right? Somebody's dominant, mm-hmm. somebody's submissive. And think about what types of power we know just out in the default world. We are most familiar with like the authoritarian type of power because I said so. I am going to be yelly and mean and intimidating and right. Like, and I think part of that is probably because in the media, what we see the most are dominant men and submissive women. So we're also playing out those like stereotypical gender roles and stereotypical archetypes and how they relate to different types of power. And when we look at like traditional masculine gendered power, we see like authoritarian, war, violence, you know what I mean? And that is completely a valid way to play. But having that knowledge that is the way I'm playing here, and maybe for me, that's not the flavor that I like. That's what makes mm-hmm. me go, ew. And that is literally, genuinely makes me personally go, ew, that's not my thing. And when I went into the kink community, that's all I saw. And I was like, whew, maybe this isn't for me. And then
like
I start
those specific gender roles.
Yes. Yes.
That... Oh, and that's interesting.
Even if it wasn't, you know, there were a lot of dominant men, submissive women. And of course, it's going to be different if you're in the gay community or, you know, more queer communities. It's going to be a little bit different. But even in the community that I first entered in, which was largely heterosexual, little queer, even the female dominance, they embodied that male authoritarian stereotypical energy. There was no difference. I didn't get to see. I saw power over, never power with, never with. Nurturing, never playful, never a give and take. And so when you only see one archetype in kink, that's like, yeah, that fuels a lot of the misconceptions. I mean, probably, yeah, the majority of them. And when you realize that's just one flavor of an infinite smorgasbord and you get to choose what that is. And then when you're doing it with another person, it's a combination of whatever they choose. So now we have infinity, you know, squared. That's a lot you can do.
That's a lot of options. Oh my God. So this play with power, I think we are so power illiterate in the society. It affects everything every day all the time. Power is flowing regardless of whether or not we are conscious of it. So I think stepping into this world where you actually consciously you're conscious of the power dynamics and so conscious that consent is a part of it. And everybody thinks like the dominant is the one in control, but really submissive is the one that is like saying, okay, I'm allowing this. My friend, I befriended this beautiful human in New Zealand, and he is a member of the Shibari community, the rope tying. And he taught me so much about the philosophy behind it, and it started to open up my eyes. And like I didn't know anything about it. I still haven't explored it in person, and like that's definitely calling me. But yeah, he described a lot of what he had learned about power dynamics. And as a cis, a heterosexual white male in New Zealand, like he I saw like saw his journey of understanding power dynamics and really understanding that as he was tying people up, like what consent was needed and that they were leading, and just this beautiful, and even the way that he described it was that he was being so gentle around like not really wanting to touch the person he was tying up. And she was like, you need to grab me, you need to hold me so that I feel safe. Like, stop pussing around. Like, I need this from you. And I'm like, oh God, that's so, all of it is, I feel like I'm just starting to understand the benefits of this play in this, like in this area, and the amount of safety and the amount of communication that's needed there. I know. Oh yeah, go
No,
ahead.
I was just like, my brain's like, it's lighting up. You know, the thing you said about power and knowing power, and then bringing it back to polyamory and the transferable skills and agreements. One thing I would love to just point out to folks to think about is in polyamory, you know, we say a lot of times pertaining to jealousy, a lot of what can fuel that is thinking that love is a finite resource, right? Like, oh, there's only so much love to go around. If someone else is getting it, I'm not getting it. And that realization that it is infinite, it keeps growing and growing and growing. It's the same with power. You know, we approach power just how we're conditioned in society that it is a finite resource. If I have power, that means you don't. I'm taking it from you. Why can't we have a scene where maybe I'm dominant and you're submissive, and to the outsider, we might be looking like we're doing, garden variety kink, like no different, but maybe we're both gaining power. Maybe, I'm exercising my power over you in a way that also empowers you. And at the end, we both have more power. Like, who says there's an inverse relationship? So just
My
that
God.
concept is like, yeah, exactly. And so then let's go to agreements. Because oftentimes in kink, one, there is this misunderstanding about the power that we have and we hold, and when we can and can't exercise it, especially when we're submissive. But also, this also goes over to the dominant side too. It's just a little different flavor. If I'm supposed to be submissive and I've agreed, like, don't speak when spoken to. Maybe we're doing very traditional. Don't speak when spoken to. Don't look into my eyes and be very meek and, obedient. If I'm like in my head going, but this isn't working for me because I need you to grab me harder. But I'm submissive and I can't say that right now. So do I just be quiet, right? So there's that issue. And then the second issue, when we're negotiating kink, which is done before we're in a scene together, right? We talk about all our agreements. There is this misunderstanding of what role am I in right now? Am I my submissive kink self right now when we're negotiating, or am I me? No, you're you. You're your autonomous you. But also, when you're in a scene and you're doing the kink, it's not like you've thrown your autonomous you out the window and you're only submissive you. I look at it as you're in two different dimensions, right? Like you're two different people at once. So when I'm negotiating, I put my autonomous self forward. It's It's like, all right, yeah, I need you to do this, that. This is my limits, this is my desires, et cetera, et cetera. Now let's go play, right? So now when we're playing, I'm putting my, let's say I'm submissive in this scenario, putting my submissive self forward, kind of like we're actors on a stage, but in another way, it's me. It feels like me to my core, but there's still another version of me that's like in the back seat. I've put the submissive self in the driver's seat. The submissive self is like, you know, the interface that's experiencing all of the sensory stuff and having fun and going into that fantasy and becoming somebody else. But my autonomous self is in that back seat watching always. And if something goes funky, autonomous self hops in the front seat, grabs the wheel for just a minute and says, oh, hey, safe word, or, oh, hey, we didn't talk about this in our negotiation because I didn't think it would come up, but it is now. Time out. Can we like adjust something, right? So I think it's that losing of our autonomy in the fantasy and having a, I don't want to say a poor understanding, because even when you get it, it's hard to get. Like, I'm two people at one time, two headspaces at one time. But even knowing that that's a thing is a huge step in going, oh, I can really make this my own. I can really, you know, get rid of the things I don't like and lean into the things I do like and really have that give and take with my partner with agreements and consensual compromise, right? So we're all getting what we want, all or both, or how many ever of us there are, right? Yeah.
Oh my God. All of this makes so much sense. In fact, as you were talking, I was thinking about IFS, internal family systems. Mm-hmm. We do have the language of multiple parts. Right. You know, if those are emotional parts, and just imagine that they're coming up for different reasons. And I don't know, the whole, just now it's occurring to me, I'm like, sexual healing, I think that actually could be a thing. It is a thing.
Yeah.
Like, you are allowing these parts to be present, to have voice, to experience something, to be in control, to receive and generate and give and receive power. Like,
right.
Oh, it's just another expression of that with the physical body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And another thing or skill that I firmly believe that as we're moving, not just through kink, but polyamory, everything, life, any relation with another person in any capacity, is to parse out the difference between that emotional driven, logic, because emotion isn't always, you know, logical, but so I'm doing finger quotes, in both ourselves and our partners versus that very logical, kind of neutral, third party, bird's eye view of what's going on. And those are two different things. We can be motivated by emotion and make completely different choices or have reactions that may seem out of left field or out of character to an onlooker, but they are very valid. Right? They're not silly. They're real. And we need to experience those, but also have that foresight or that knowledge as to, okay, why are we experiencing these? And how is it affecting my partner and vice versa? And that's really complicated. Like, that's what we all go to therapy for anyway, right? And the cool thing about kink is we get to do it in a safe container. So those people who are listening who have done improv or who play Dungeons and Dragons or any tabletop role-playing games, right, where we are becoming somebody else and we're playing a different character, that's what we're doing. We're doing that in a safe container. So those of you who have played any kind of role-playing game, let's say I'm going to be a bard or, you know, whatever. And I'm going to make choices in this game that maybe might be out of character for like the real me. But right now I'm not the real, I'm a bard. And I have this whole backstory and this whole personality. So I'm going to make different decisions and do different things because I get to do that. And maybe, just maybe, yes, it feels like play, and it feels like I just ran him out of left field. This seems fun. I'm gonna be feisty and not cooperate, and you know, be kind of dim and make wrong choices and like make it difficult for my whole party to like get the big boss at the end or something. That probably comes from a little part of us that's like, I've always wanted to play with that existence or that emotion, or that I've always wanted to be bratty and talk back or whatever, and I never get to do that in real life because that's actually rude, especially doing it to somebody without their consent. But now I'm allowed to do it. So when we start playing with those parts of ourselves, we get to explore all sorts of different things, you know, our strengths, our weaknesses, our fears, all of that, and also our boundary setting. Right? We get to say, maybe it's part of my character that I, you know, maybe I'm being dominant, right? And so, and this is ripped from my own headlines, from my own story. I started out submissive and now I lean more into dominance because that is a part of me that I don't get to exercise in the default world. I don't get to be the authority. Mm-hmm. And even when I am legitimately the authority, I am minimized. I am gaslit. I am not listened to. I want to be that scary ass bitch that people don't question when I say this is how things are going to go. And because I've got to do that, and this is not, you know, I didn't go into it going, that's exactly what's happening in my psyche. So I'm going to do this and that and this. So I'm going to improve my, it just kind of happened. It's like in retrospect, I'm like, thought it was just fun. This is what happened. Yeah, I had no idea. But now I get to, when I'm in a situation where I have to exert authority or take some kind of risk, I can stick to my guns a little bit better. I can have that confidence because I got to play with it as a character sexually improvising.
And I love that. Yeah. I mean, you're talking and I'm like, I see you like that badass bitch that's like, hey, here I am.
Inside, so I am not like, that badass bitch. I'm like this wrinkly brain 52-year-old. What was I talking about? Who's that guy in that movie? Yeah, like.
No, but that part is present. And like you said, you can hold it. You can be that. You can play. And you can experience that spectrum within yourself.
Yeah.
How? And you didn't do it on purpose. That's why this is such a learning path. You know, I keep saying polyamory or open relating is a learning path. You know, kink is a learning path. It's just these different adventures.
Right. And you don't always realize what you're learning. I liken this to a systems download in the background, like when you're playing on your computer. Let's say you're playing World of Warcraft on your computer. No, I'm not a gamer. I just keep bringing up games. I am. You're playing World of Warcraft on your computer. And, you know, a Windows pops up like we're updating to Windows, blah, 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 point, blah, blah, blah. But don't worry, you can still keep playing your game. It's going to update in the background. And before you know it, you'll have a better operating system. And that's kind of what we're doing. We're doing that operating system download. We just think we're playing. We're just having fun. We have no idea that our operating system just got improved. Cool.
That's such a perfect analogy. Oh, my God. Yes. Just yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. That's what's happening. I love it. And I love when you talked about the container. Can we like geek out about the container for a second? I feel like understanding that we are responsible, like relating every time we are in a relationship, that is a container. The thing is, we're usually not conscious of it. What I hear you saying is that you, like in this world, in the world of kink, BDSM, play, people engage in this and consciously set up the container.
Yes.
Like that. I love that so much.
Yeah.
I mean, anything you want to share on that process?
It's all about intention. You know, we can do things by accident and they could end up being good for us, right? We can just as easily do things by accident and they're awful, right? When we are going into whatever safe container with intention, not only, you know, you can't guarantee safety. First of all, you're mindful of safety. You're trying the best you can to make everything safe. And when I say safe, it might be in a physical way in kink. It might be in an emotional way in a polyamorous relationship, whatever it is, how you feel safe and secure. So when you go into something, setting those intentions, saying, okay, this is what I want. This is what I don't want. What do you want? What do you don't want? Ooh, those things clash. Okay, let's dig down even further and figure out where we can find that consensual compromise to give us both what we need without overstepping our boundaries. Awesome. And then we enter into that safe container. Not only do we enter into it with that security, but if, and this is the caveat, if we are entering into it with a partner or partners that we feel emotionally safe with, we feel that even if something goes wrong, even if there's a big misunderstanding and they violate a boundary or whatever it is, we know they're going into this in good faith, not trying to manipulate me or dick me around or whatever it is. And I have confidence that if something does go wrong, or really when something does go wrong, because we're all human and it will never be perfect, no matter how hard we try, we have that confidence and security to know that our partner is going to react like, oh shit, my bad. I did not. Okay. How can we fix this? How can we make that? You know, what can we do? Let's work together. And if we're entering into a container with that knowledge and that feeling of security, then we have the freedom within that container to push our own boundaries. Like, yes, you can push other people's boundaries if they specifically request it and you negotiate it to the team. But no, it's risky pushing other people's boundaries even when they request it and you've negotiated it, because things go wrong. Nothing's perfect, right? But you can push your own boundaries. You can be like, you know, me being the dominant, I'm really nervous exerting my authority. But I feel real safe to be silly here, right? Like when we have partners, it's the kind of age-old stereotype. When you have a new partner, right, you are on your best behavior, you don't want to fart in front of them, you don't want to, like, you're embarrassed to, you get to the point where you're like farting, you know, you're pooping with the door open, you're whatever, right? You feel safe enough to like push yourself and be your real self, and you know they're not going to be like, you're disgusting. You know, that's the container we want to be in.
Yes.
Poop and fart in front of each other. That's what we want to do.
Of course. That's super sexy. That's the goal.
Yes.
That's the aim. That's a whole other podcast. No, isn't it so crazy, though, that we see this world, you know, I will take my eyes from 5 years ago, where I looked at the kink BDSM community as like so far out there and crazy, like I couldn't imagine it. But then there I was, and I, you know, my 20-year-old self was hooking up with people and not having safe containers, you know, mm-hmm. like that's the more risky behavior.
Yeah.
Is like engaging with someone where you haven't actually established those boundaries or haven't communicated, or people don't have the skills to be like, wait, I don't know what I want. Or do you know, can we talk about these things? And, you know, it's kind of like we're blindfolded in the world of our own sexuality, mm-hmm. causing trauma, our own and others.
Right.
And that is the more risky thing.
Yeah.
Than the kink BDSM community, which is like, hey, let's talk about this, mm-hmm. you know, let's be emotionally intelligent about this. We're going to set up a safe, intentional container. Like that to me seems like the aim of all relating,
right?
Whether or not it is physical, mental, emotional, spiritual. It's like that could be the way that we orient ourselves.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Everything looks backwards now.
I know
me.
It does. And a lot of folks say like, well, that kills my vibe. Cause we all know when we were hooking up in our 20s, you know, there may have been 10 hookups that were like, meh, like, could have done without that, whatever. It wasn't bad. It wasn't good. You know, it was. And then we had that one where it's like the chemistry. It's like, holy shit, my life has changed. I spoke in tongues. I don't know what happened. We didn't even talk to each other. I don't even know their name. But that was the most magical sexual experience I've ever had. And I will never forget it. Right. And it's like, totally valid. But when you look at, I don't know, the overall cost benefit ratio there, it's like you're taking all these risks and these potential losses and big losses and trauma mm-hmm. to have that one, whoa, I don't know what happened, but like we just were coincidentally really on the same page. You can cultivate those same page experiences and talk to each other and have agreements and negotiate your safe container and still get your socks blown off. And maybe not eliminate risk, because again, this is all, you can do your due diligence and you could still have a really horrible experience, but it's like harm reduction, right? You're minimizing the chances of being really, really hurt by whatever transpires.
It so makes sense. I know that you had mentioned earlier before we were talking, recording, that you had recently done a humiliation workshop. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me more about that? Because I feel like that kind of gets tied in, especially, I will say, in the polyamorous world. I feel like there's a lot for the masculine tied up in, like, shame and humiliation of their partner, their, if they're cisgender, like their female partner going and playing with someone else. I don't know. I'm like, I don't know if that ties in there at all, but if we can unpack that a little bit,
yeah.
Like either playing with it, destigmatizing it. I don't know. All of the stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. There, you know, first of all, in kink, humiliation is one of those really misunderstood things. If I'm negotiating with someone or just talking to someone, like, what are your kinks? Right. And I get to humiliation. They're like, nope, red, hard limit. Don't even want to talk about humiliation. Move on. What's the next thing? And really, I think that's doing us all a disservice, because humiliation, we assume that humiliation is only the very extreme, cruel, hurtful, I am going to cry, I don't want to feel this way, nothing about this is sexy, I'm going to be called the things that maybe I'm called in my default life that really hurt me, that I'm in therapy mm-hmm. for. Why would I want to do that? And first of all, that is just one little tiny flavor. You know, if we think of the infinite spectrum, humiliation's mm-hmm. on an infinite spectrum too. We are also engaging, oftentimes, even folks that consider themselves vanilla, in humiliation without realizing it, without having that intention, without having that negotiation. And, you know, we're back into our 20s hooking up with random people. Mm-hmm. Maybe that humiliation happened to be hot and it worked out. But how many times are you stepping into a world of what the fuck, you know? So some of the vanilla humiliation things, you know, listener, if you consider yourself more vanilla or just vanilla, maybe a little sprinkles. If you've had a partner, you know, even like while they're fucking you, being like, you like that, don't you? Oh, you're such a nasty slut. Like we do that dirty talk in vanilla sex all the time. All the time. And for a lot of us, you might say, like, oh, that's kind of hot. It's like, you know, makes me feel a little bashful for a second, but it's also makes me feel even more, it's like overshadowed by the hotness. That's not really humiliation. Is it? Yes, it is. It is.
Yeah, I wouldn't have put that in the humiliation
right.
bucket.
It is.
Yeah.
And humiliation, and this is why I'm going to encourage all these folks to, you know, come take my humiliation course. I do have it recorded too. And I teach it live every once in a while as well. But there's a whole spectrum of humiliation that goes from embarrassment that is like the, like I was saying, like, ooh, you know, oh, you have new panties? Let me see. Turn around and shake your ass for me. And you're kind of like, but you also are like, yes, I'm going to shake that ass on your right. That is humiliation, even though it feels fun and playful. So, you know, that's on the embarrassment end of the spectrum. And then we can go, you know, deeper levels. And the one that we all associate is shame, like the real deep shame. Like I am fundamentally flawed as a human being now. Like, it is valid. Some people like to play that intense and they intentionally play with that shame. Is it psychologically risky? Yes. Do I recommend people who play with that shame try to get their hands on a kink-friendly therapist and talk it out with them? Absolutely. But I also understand that healthcare is, you know, right now a privilege and not a right as it should be. Mm. And even if you have healthcare, trying to find a kink-friendly therapist is difficult. So sometimes things are less than perfect, but in an ideal world, yeah, that's some deep stuff to play with, and it's risky. It's also very valid, and also where a lot of more emotional masochist sort of identifying folks like to play. But a lot of people are like, hell no. Then when they hear humiliation, they think it's only that deep shame. And it's like, you don't have to do that. And when the thing about humiliation is it's subjective, right? An act isn't embarrassing. So when I gave the example, oh, you're wearing cute pink panties, you know, shake your ass. Let's say you're at a party. Let's say, you know, maybe your metamors are there. It's a bunch of people. So you're having to shake your ass in front of people, right? And for some people, they might be like, oh, I'm a little red cheeked, you know, pick cheeks, all four cheeks, whatever. but it's kind of fun. I kind of like showing off. I kind of like being the center of attention, but I'm kind of embarrassed at the same time. Awesome. I could have another person do that. I could say, oh, shake your ass. They could go right into shame. You know, what you find, acts aren't humiliating. Humiliation is subjective based on that individual's experiences, perspective, worldview, etc. So knowing that and going back to this is vanilla sex and I'm saying, oh, you're such a good little slut, aren't you? That person might find that real hot and that person might spiral back into some traumatic moment and just it kills like every vibe from here on out. And if we're playing with that without that awareness of knowing what are the different, you know, levels of humiliation, how might they be subjective to each person, and how can they go wrong? How can they go right? And then how can we negotiate them ahead of time to make sure I'm not hitting you in your shame place when you don't want to be there? Or maybe I am hitting you in your shame place when you want to be there, but maybe we've also negotiated by emotion. So maybe when we've negotiated this intense, heavy scene, I've said, all right, I have, like on my sheet, I have this whole list of emotions. You've seen it. I want to feel degraded. I want to feel worthless. And I want to be made to cry. However, I have a couple more emotions I want to make my goal at the end of this scene. That's what I want to feel in the middle. I want to feel broken, just raw, torn apart. But at the end, I want to feel worthy. I want to feel... you know, maybe I want to feel orgasm and sexual pleasure. Maybe I, you know, whatever it is I want to feel. So when you're negotiating it that way, it's like, I want you to take me to the depths. Like when you're watching a scary movie, I want you to take me to that like climactic, you know, B movie slasher film. The whole campsite's getting slaughtered. But then I want the ending where it's like the heroes survive and they, you know. It is. So if you know that ahead of time and you negotiate it, your chances of something turning out positive for everyone and fostering that shared power, that empowerment. Maybe I'm dominating you and I'm like, you're, you know, horrible names, like all the things that the most listeners are like, I never want to be called that, but maybe this person wants to be called that. I'm empowering you at the end because maybe you felt like you got to choose those things that I called you, and out when you've been called them in your past or out in the default world, people yelling out of cars or whatever it is, you don't get to choose that. And you don't get to choose how you feel afterwards, but in our safe container, you do. You get to take something that is negative and horrible in the real world and stays negative and horrible and leaves you with that horrible bad taste in your mouth and that trauma. And you get to flip it in the end and turn it into something positive. And I'm not saying that this is always the sole psychological motivation for playing with humiliation. There's, again, infinite reasons. This is just one example of what it might do for somebody. And we don't have to know that either. We don't have to go in, you know, going like, well, my psychological trauma is this and that, so I want to play with this. We can just know some of the beats enough to negotiate it.
Wow, that is crazy. Literally never considered any of that. And how somatic that is, right? To be put in the driver's seat of take me there emotionally, viscerally. Like I want to feel that place. Mm-hmm. But then I want this agreed on, like I will be taken somewhere else. That is like a crazy reframe at the somatic level.
Yeah, there's so much just right there. It's like, you know, that could be like I get to rewrite how I feel or how it comes out. It might be I get to rewrite it because, you know, maybe And here's an example. Let's say I like to be humiliated about my looks. And a lot of women are like, this is why I don't like humiliation. I don't want somebody to call me fat, stupid, ugly. Your boobs are too saggy. You know, whatever it is, right? Let's say, though, it's my choice. I want somebody to take me there. And those are real, like, tough places for me. And maybe it's a tough place for me because when I have those own intrusive thoughts, when I look in the mirror, I push them away. I push them away. I push them away. And I never deal with them. And maybe this is my chance to take them out and play with them and really examine them. And not only that, you know, it could be desensitizing. It could be like facing the shit I'm always running away from, whatever it is. But it's also, if I want to feel good at the end, somebody I love, let's say it's a partner that I'm really close with, which you, if you're doing this intense humiliation, it should be with somebody that you're really close. Don't do this with strangers. Somebody I love is calling me all of these horrible things that I run away from in my day-to-day life. And in the end, they still love me. That's powerful. You know, so even if this doesn't resonate with you or whoever is listening, to understand that these could be motivations for other people and it could be what they are getting out of it. And maybe that would not be healthy for you, but maybe it is healthy for them. And that's their choice. They know themselves better than anyone. Mm-hmm. They get to make those choices. Understanding that motivation behind what's happening makes us not so like, ew, kink, that's so weird. It's not for me, right? And it also makes us realize, again, it reinforces that it's not what we're doing. It's the intention we're doing it with. Mm-hmm. It's how, you know, exactly. So it's play. It's all play.
It is so, oh my God. I feel like we could talk for hours. We need to have a round two because we totally didn't even get into the culture, the way that we relate to pleasure in general.
Oh gosh,
like,
yes.
I know. Like, I feel like if we open up that can of worms, I'll just like put a teaser out there. And maybe at some point we continue that particular conversation.
Totally.
Oh my God. Because the way that we relate to our own pleasure is, I talk about shame, right? Like that is just mm-hmm. there. Okay, but man, I'm like, now that I open it up, maybe we just, a minute or two, and then because I'm conscious of our time and I want to make sure people know how to find you, but oh my God, could you riff on the way that we culturally relate to our own pleasure?
Oh my goodness. I mean, pleasure and shame and culture are all tied together. You know, I look at shame, like what is the purpose of shame? On a societal cultural level, it's to control, oppress, etc. And one of the ways that we have been conditioned, you know, culturally over generations and generations, at least in our Western culture in America, which is why my podcast is called American Sex, not because a lot of people think of it like America. I'm like, no, like America's fucked us up. Like, let's look at our own unique flavor of fucked up here in America, because we've been conditioned to feel shame as a means of control and oppression. And that means we have to be blocked from accessing our own pleasure. Because when we access our own pleasure, we are fully embodied. We are, mm-hmm. you know, we're in that safe container. We realize anything's possible. We can grow. And, you know, that is an inverse relationship. The more pleasure, the less shame.
Mm-hmm. And we are empowered, right? Mm-hmm. We are truly in our power right. as we step into that.
And really the systems, you know, for getting into like the capitalism, you know, patriarchy, all of these things that like keep our society functioning, are not going to be functioning very well if we're all empowered mm-hmm. and we realize anything's possible. So
see this, it's like full circle. This brings us back to power, leads us to create our own agreements, which we set up, which then we can have power flow in the way that we want to.
Mm-hmm.
And truly like heal ourselves, right? Like
right.
be at the source of the creating of ourselves in our life.
Right. And that infinite power. Power is infinite. Like the more I can cultivate and cultivate for you, and we all get empowered, and it's awesome. And yeah, agreements are a huge part of that, because the first agreement you make are the agreements with yourself. That's what I, that was my huge stepping stone. And then everything, like I said, it's always work. It's always going to be work, but things fall into place easier and easier and easier with that first piece really addressed.
Oh my goodness. More, please. What did we not talk about that you feel like you want the Amory listeners to hear?
Oh,
is there anything?
Goodness.
Probably a million things, but.
You know, I just want to leave, I guess, with a reiterating message that we started out with. So I ask you to think again, everything that you think you know about kink, throw it out the window. Throw it out the window and think about these things that we talked about today as sort of the basis or the starting point, and then the how you look when you do it, what tools you use, what floggers you have. Is it about sex? Is it not about sex? Like all of those details, right? Am I going to wear latex? Am I going to be in my pajamas? Those are all incidental. And those are all up to you, how you act, how you embody your characters. And it's all based on your agreements with yourself and your partners and your intention and going into this with good faith.
Oh my gosh. Thank you.
Yeah.
Sunny. Where can people find you can get more of
you? Sunny Megatron, just SUNNY Megatron at tag every social media. Where else? SunnyMegatron.com on Showtime, Sex with Sunny Megatron TV show, American Sex Podcast, Open Deeply Podcast, zippermagazine.com, all about kink. And yeah, everywhere. Just look me up. I'll be there. Also,
you are a busy lady.
I do want to add, and I'll send people to my like all links page, just direct.me/sunnymegatron. I have the humiliation class, for instance, on-demand download with negotiation materials. I also have the negotiation materials that you were talking about that you have. Those are free.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just, you know, go to my links, it's through Gumroad, like look me up on Gumroad, get that negotiation stuff and all the emotional prompts and all that stuff free and start not using it to negotiate with partners, but go through it first yourself and use it to negotiate with yourself first and build from there.
Oh, love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Thank you. Thank you for your wisdom, your energy, your humor. Just more, please.
Yay. Yeah. Anytime.
I'll end on that.
This is my geek out place. All of it. All of it. When you're like, what has you jazzed right now? I'm like, oh, everything. Why do I have to choose?
Oh my gosh,
it's infinite.
Thank you.
It's infinite.
It's infinite. Yes. It's all there. But thank you, Amory listeners, for listening. I know you can put your attention in so many different places, and I so value you. So thank you. Thank you for joining us. If you want in-person experiences, look up the Nature of Relating Retreat, where we get to geek out on many things. I'm so excited to be able to spend time in person with people here in this beautiful land that I get to call home. So thank you. Thank you, everyone. Till next time.